we're in this book of Judges, and we're going to get into it, and because there's so much. You know, I used to sit around sometimes. I don't know if you guys did this, sit around with people sometimes and go, man, people these days, they're just getting dumber and stupider all the time. Anybody ever done that? Like, sit around and go, like, people just, you know. But then I read the book of Judges. I'm like, okay, maybe we were always being really stupid and really dumb in a lot of ways. Because it's just, you know, we'll sit back and we'll talk about this book, and we want to kind of share as much as we can that we feel like God's pulling out that we can learn from and grow from. But there is so much in the book of Judges. I mean, there's all these little characters you see, and some of them do very, very dumb things that you want to, like, talk about. Some of them do incredible things that you want to talk about. It's just incredible. So I say that to say this. Make sure you take time as we're going through this series this summer. And if you've never read through the book of Judges, I'd encourage you to pick up your Bible and read through the book of Judges. It's good. And you see a lot of the struggle that you're going to see yourself and a lot of these characters and a lot of the struggles that take place. Not hopefully that you're about to go into some weird battle against lions or Philistines, but the fact that you have to make decisions in life. And a lot of times those decisions are not as black and white as you would want them to be. And there's some struggle that goes on in that. So, last week, Matt kind of started at the end of the book of Judges for us and gave us this really long, incredibly sad, treacherous, never-ending, demoralizing story that took place at the end of the book of Judges. It was great. If you didn't hear it, you should go back and watch last week's message so you can get caught up, because it's really kind of puts this bow at the end of it. The very last, it says that they did what was right in their own eyes. And we see that all this craziness that happened, all this chaos, the war, the murder, you know, all this stuff that took place happened because the people were doing what was right in their own eyes. You know, if you've ever raised kids, and all your dads, happy Father's Day. I've got three daughters that I'm in the process of raising, or sometimes I think they're raising me, but you realize what happens when people do things that seem right in their own eyes, right? The other day, I've got like three daughters, and the oldest and the youngest are like the loud, get in trouble ones. My middle one is like the one that everybody thinks is like the perfect little angel. Like, you know, and I'm like weary of her. Cause like I kind of get the other two. I'm like, oh yeah, it's me. You know, I see this. And the one that's like always good, I'm just weary of. I'm like, and keep my eye on her. Well, the other day, like, we had got these candy bars for end of the year to give to the girls' teachers. And one day, one of them just comes up missing, you know? Just completely missing. And I'm like, Audrey, did you eat that? Because honestly, my wife has a tendency, if there's something sweet in the house, like, she's going to go for it. I'm like the chip guy. You don't keep chips in my house for me. But if it's sweet, she's going to go after it, right? And so I'm like, Audrey, did you? She goes, I don't know, I got home really late and I was tired. And I'm like, you don't remember whether you ate a candy bar or not? How do you not remember? Did you like go on a sugar bender or what took place here? She goes, I don't think I did. I go, okay. Well, 2 days later, the other one comes up missing. And I'm like, okay, we got an epidemic here. Something's going on. So I'm like sitting my girls down. All right, who took the candy bar? Every one of them. Straight face lot. Not me, not me, not me. You know, all of them. Like, I know somebody, like, there's not a ghost that can't. My cat did not take the candy bar and go eat it somewhere, you know? One of you guys took the candy bar, right? So finally, through coercion and trickery of my own, which is not good. I had to go back and, like, ask forgiveness from them later, right? Finally, Journey, like, it was weird because she's watching a Disneyland. I'm going to confess my own sinfulness right here, all right? You guys can beat me up. Get ready to put something on Facebook. I don't care. Quentin's bad. Here we go. I did what was right in my own eyes. It was really bad. All right. She's watching a Disney World video, and my middle daughter, she's a princess. She wants to go to Disney World and all this stuff. I'm like, well, you know, we might go to Disney World one day, but I guess I'm going to have to look at our cameras inside the house and see who ate that candy bar, you know? And my oldest daughter gets it. She's like, it's in the house. Yeah. And like, then my oldest daughter just takes it. Yeah, check out those cameras. You know, December's selling it, right? And Journey's like, I mean, she has not faltered a bit this whole time. All of a sudden, okay, I ate the candy bar. Yeah? Well, what about the other one? Yeah, I ate that one too. And I'm like, show me where these wrappers are, because we've searched the trash and everything. She is hid in this compartment in her room where there is like candy bar wrappers. There's like multiple food wrappers compartmentalized in this place. I mean, she has done what was right in her own eyes, right? What she wanted. She wanted something, she went and got it, you know? And she's the skinniest of us all, too, by the way, which is the weirdest thing. She's got those metabolisms. She just wants to eat sugar, and that's all she wants. But, you know, we see that happen all the time. And that's what we looked at last week, is that when we do what's right in our own eyes, these things just tumble out of control, you know? We make bad decisions, quick decisions, try to get something we want, something we need, and then it all falls apart. So I want to, this morning, to kind of take us back to the beginning. Because I think sometimes you can look at the end and you see how crazy things were. But if we can look at the beginning, maybe we can see just for a minute where it all went wrong. And maybe we can begin to see where everything started to fall apart. And it's usually not really big things that cause things to fall apart. It's usually small things a lot of times. You know, it's usually just a little compromise here that would cause something to go off course. I was reading a book recently. Actually, Paul was on our staff. He gave us this book called Little Things by Andy Andrews. And it was talking about this story where these two guys were going to go out fishing. And they had to go out a pretty good ways. I think it was like 100 miles out to this oil rig. And they would go out there and they were going to fish. And they had that boat. The boat there was a somewhat large boat, not a huge boat. So it had enough gas to make it out there and make it back. So it's really important they went there and got back. And it had an automatic navigation system on it. So you just punched in the coordinates, set it on its course, and let it go. And it would go there and come back. Well, all of a sudden, they're riding out to this oil rig. And they realize that they've been riding a lot longer than they thought they should have had to ride. So they stop. They try to look around. They try to see if they've seen this oil rig. They try to figure out what's going on. And they realize, we're not anywhere near where we're supposed to be. So they turn around, they try to get their bearings, they turn around, they try to head back, and the boat runs out of gas a long way from land. And someone finally sees them and is able to tow them back in. And here's what they did. They got that boat and they took it in because they said, something's going on here. Something happened that put us in a really bad situation. And they looked at that navigation system, and somehow that navigation system had been off by 1 degree. 1 degree. And see, 1 degree, when you're going a mile, not that big a deal, right? You can see where you want to be. But when you keep going, it kept taking them farther and farther away from their destination. And with compromise, I wonder sometimes, you know, we've been taught compromise a lot of times is a good thing, right? You have to compromise in marriage. I get that, right? We make compromises, you know. We've heard the saying, you have to decide what hill you want to die on. And you deal that sometimes when you're dealing with my kids. You know, there's times I decide, is this a hill I really want to die on? Or is this a place where I give a little space and let them make some decisions here? And in work and in business, you're going to compromise. You're going to compromise with your coworkers. And that's going to be part of everything we do. But when it comes to our values, when it comes to God, when it comes to what God's called us to do and who He's called us to be, I think sometimes we can compromise just a little bit, and before long, we're way, way, way off course. You know, I see it all the time, people who compromise just a smidge in their moral life. The next thing you know, they find themselves in places they never thought they'd be. You know, you know what? It won't hurt just to try this one time. This just for fun. I'm just going to try this one thing one time. And the next thing you know, you're dealing with someone who's deep, deep into addiction. Someone who's like, you know what? I'm just going to go to this website just this one time to see what it's all about, right? And next thing you know, they're meeting up with somebody that's not their spouse. They're having an affair. And their marriage is falling apart. And that wasn't where they started out, right? It wasn't like in the beginning they said, you know what my goal is to completely derail my life in this moment. I want to make a decision that will completely take my life away. I never thought it would go. But they just make a small compromise. And the life heads, when it's 100 miles out, is so far away from where they thought it was going to be. That one compromise takes you there. And that's why we have to be really careful about compromise. And we see, like, if we want to begin to look at the beginning of the book of Judges, we're going to see that it really wasn't big decisions that caused all this mess to happen throughout what we're about to study for the next few weeks. It was small decision. And it wasn't like a decision they had to make on their own. It was a small decision to do something that was against what God had asked them to do. And it wasn't a huge thing. And it wasn't a blatant sin. It wasn't like they, you know, were completely like just turned their back on God and did their own thing. They just did it a little different than God asked them to. So, we're going to get into Judges now. And we're going to be in the very first chapter. All right? We're looking and starting in the very first chapter of Judges at verse 19. And you're going to see this up here. And we're going to read some stuff, and I'm going to tell you some of it, because some of it gets kind of repetitive, so I'm not going to read all of it. But it says, "And the Lord was with Judah." All right? It's one of the guys, one of the leaders of the tribes, and he took possession of the hill country. But he could not drive out the inhabitants of the plain, because they had chariots of iron. All right? Verse 20, "And Hebron was given to Caleb, as Moses had said. And he drove out from it the three sons of Anak." All right, now I'll explain that Caleb's going to be a guy we follow in a minute, because Caleb's going to be an example for us. The three sons of Anak. Anak was a giant, like of a man, like he was from the descendants of these guys who were giants. They were a really feared people, and Caleb went and drove them out. All right, verse 21. "But the people of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites who lived in Jerusalem. So the Jebusites have lived with the people of Benjamin in Jerusalem to this day." Do you remember the tribe where all this went really, really south in the story last week? It was this tribe, right? It was this tribe. It was the tribe of Benjamin. When all this, remember the guy took his, and so the guy took his concubine, and they were staying in this one person's house, and these people come out, and the concubine ends up dying by being abused overnight. It was in the tribe of Benjamin this takes place. It's because they didn't drive everybody out. They let them stay with them to this day. And if you go, and I'm just going to read this for you really quick. If you go into Judges chapter 1, hopefully you do it this week, and you read more of this. If you start reading like at verse 27, it says things like this. "Manasseh, another one of the tribes, did not drive out the inhabitants of Bethshean and its villages, or Taanak and its villages." All right, you go on down, it says, "And Ephraim did not drive out the Canaanites who lived in Gazar." It says, "Zebulun did not drive out the inhabitants of Kitron." It says, "Asher did not drive out the inhabitants of Akko, or the inhabitants of Sidon." "Naphtali did not drive out the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh." All right, and so it's like over and over and over, we see where it says they took this land that God had promised them, but they didn't drive out this people. And you go, well, they won, right? Yes, Israel is thriving. They are a force to be reckoned with. God has his hand on them, and he's developing a people that all the rest of the world is going to get to know who God is through them. But here's what he asked them to do. He said, when you take a land, drive the people out of it. Drive them to different land. This was God's request, is God's command to the people of Israel. I'm going to give you a land. I'm going to make you a blessing to all people. When you get a land, when you take a land, drive people out of it. And time and time and time again, we read Judges. They took this land, but they did not drive out this people. See, it's like they did part of what God asked them to do. They compromised on the rest. And I don't know. It's probably for different reasons. You know, probably at some point they might have been like, you know what? All right, we've been fighting this battle. We've won this land. Let's just, before we have to lose any more men, let's like just stop driving them out. We've got most of the land now. It's fine. Let's don't fight anymore. We don't want to have any more casualties, so let's just stop. Might have been the reason. Might have been like, you know what? Like, there actually could be beneficial to us. You know, these folks might have some skills we could use. So, in some of this, it says that he even enslaved them. So let's don't drive them out. Let's make them our servants. Compromise, right? That can maybe make life a little easier. It can make life a little more. You know, we can handle a little better if we just keep them as our servants. Compromise. Compromise. And we see it through every single tribe. Compromise. And see, this is the reason things just start going off the rails toward the end of Judges, is because every tribe is compromised what God has asked them to do. Except this one guy. There's a rep from Judah's tribe named Caleb. Caleb. Incredible guy. Maybe one of my favorite characters, all scripture. So I started wondering, as I read Judges 1, and everybody compromises but Caleb. And I don't know about you, but I want to be this person who doesn't compromise, right? It makes me want to look at Caleb. Like, who all went to man camp this last year? All right. At man camp this last year, we did this thing. Brian taught us how to read a compass. So, like, you hold it, you put however many degrees you're supposed to be going to at what point, and then you find a mark, right? You like look down it at that degree and you find the mark you want to be at and you walk toward it. All right. And then once you get there, you find another mark and you walk toward it, right? And it was really fun. And here's where Todd's gonna come in the story, all right? It was really fun. They did a little competition where we all broke up into teams, and there was like 8 different markers. And you had to see how quick you go to each marker. Each marker had something you had to write down so they knew if you made it to that marker or not. And so it was really important, right, that you don't get that 1 degree off. You couldn't compromise the degree. You couldn't compromise your mark. You had to make your mark and go toward it. You had to follow it. You couldn't compromise it, right? And our first, I think it was my team, and Hilburn, was your team the first? We were the first two to go, my team and his team. We went the opposite directions. And it was like 10 seconds to separate us. We were like, man, oh, it's close. And then we sit around and waited for like, and there's not like 3 teams. There's like 8 teams doing this, okay? And we're the first 2 of the 8 teams going. We sit around and wait for like 30 minutes for the next team to get there. And we think people have like, they're on some side of the mountain somewhere. And at some point we see Todd's team running back to the very first place they started. They've been going for like 15, 20 minutes, and they're starting completely over, right? Like, they have lost their way so bad that his whole team is starting over. I thought they were finishing. Oh, Todd, are y'all finishing? No, we got to start over. What? And at one point, I walked down because I'm like, something's wrong. And, oh, man, I think it was TJ was one of them down there. Yeah, TJ's in our sound booth, one of our drummers. Amazing guy, just great, great volunteer for us. And he's like looking by the river going, can't find this marker down here. And I'm like, there ain't no marker down here. Like, I found them all. What are you doing by the river? He goes, nuh-uh. He was like adamant. And he goes, yes, there is. I'm like, where, man? Where? And he had went to the wrong place and thought it was number 3. It was number 2. And I'm just telling you, like, you get off on that stuff and it's over. And he was lost. They were just wandering around and believing. And I'm like, man, that's what's happened to our culture today. People just get off 1 little degree and they're just wandering around and believing and going, nah, the right answer is right here. And there's no answer there. Yeah, if I just can find somebody else that'll make me happy, everything will be okay. It'll be all right. I'm like, no. You know, it doesn't matter. I know I've had to compromise, but if I can make just enough money to make me feel okay, then everything will be all right. Nah, you're wandering around in a place trying to find happiness and contentment in a place where it's never going to exist because you've compromised and you've missed the mark where you're supposed to be. And we've got a whole culture that's doing that. They've compromised the truth of who God's calling to be, of the calling that we're supposed to be following Jesus, and they're just doing their own thing, and they're just trying to find happiness, and they're just trying to do whatever, thinking if I can just find that one mark. And there's no mark there. And we're in such a critical place that I think, man, we need to look at Caleb. What makes Caleb in the middle of a culture at this time that everybody's compromised? Can you imagine? Can you imagine one of the other tribes going, hey, the Benjamites let those guys stay. We can let these guys stay too. Oh man, they're using them as servants. Maybe we can just work out a deal. We'll pay our servants a little more or something and we'll use them. Just compromise after compromise after compromise because the whole culture is compromising. But Caleb doesn't. So if you want to know this, then I think it's really important. We actually get a little bird's eye view into Caleb's story of when he takes this place and when he's asking to take this place in the book of Joshua. So, book of Joshua chapter 14, we'll look at the scripture. Chapter 14 verse 6 says this. It says, and the people of Judah came to Joshua at Gilgal. Now Joshua had took over after Moses. All right, this is just before Judges. And they had entered the promised land. And Joshua was kind of saying, okay, you go here, you guys do this. Each tribe goes here, you guys do this. And so they're coming to Joshua. And Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said to him, you know what the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, in Kadesh Barnea concerning you and me. I love this. Caleb's like, hey, Moses, remember what God said to Moses about you and me, right? Like he remembered what God said about him to Moses. He goes, I was 40 years old when Moses, a servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea. Now, he was one of the 12 spies that Moses sent out to look at the promised land and to say whether they could take it or not. Only him and Joshua, the guy he's talking to, said, yes, we can take it because God said we could take it. Only Caleb and Joshua. All right? And he says, and I brought him word again as it was in my heart. Verse, next verse says, but my brothers who went up with me made the heart of the people mad. Yet I wholly followed the Lord my God. And Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land on which your foot is trodden shall be an inheritance for you and your children forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord my God. Man, we look at this. Caleb saying, hey, Joshua, you remember when Moses said, this land was going to be my land. I was 40 years old, and he told me, Moses said, because you have wholly followed God, this land is going to be yours. And he keeps going. Look what he says. He goes, and now behold, the Lord's kept me alive. Just as he said, these 45 years since that time, the Lord spoke those words to Moses while Israel walked in the wilderness. And now behold, I am this day 85 years old. I love it. Like, because we think, right? We think, oh, okay, you don't compromise until you're 40, right? I'm looking at 40s right in front of me. We go, yeah, let's don't compromise. This guy's 85. He says, I'm still as strong today as I was in the day that Moses sent me. My strength now is as my strength was then, for war and for going and coming. Because, man, it's 45 years ago that I was promised this land because I wholly followed God, and I'm just as strong as I was then. So now give me this hill country of which the Lord spoke on that day. For you heard on that day how the Anakim were there with great fortified cities. It may be that the Lord will be with me, and I shall drive them out just as the Lord said. Did you get that? I will drive them out just as the Lord said. And Caleb got it for some reason, right? He understood. Like, it wasn't like, I'm just going to get my land. It's like, no, this is what God promised me because I follow him completely. And Caleb understood it. He's one that, when everybody said, we can't take the promised land, when all the other 10 spies said, they're too big, the walls are too fortified, Caleb and Joshua said, God said we can take it, so we can take it. And this place he goes to is not one of the easy places. It's a hill country. You guys get this? He's not going to the valley where they're on top of the cliff shooting down, right? Caleb says, send me to the hill country. Send me to the tough, the descendants of the giants live there. So, I mean, if you're Caleb, him and Joshua are the only two from the old Israel that can go in the promised land. Because they're the only two that are obedient. Moses doesn't get to go in. Let me just tell you, if you're Caleb, you can ask for any land you want in that moment. You get first preference from Joshua. Because you're the one guy who stood with Joshua when everybody else stood against him. You can ask for anything. And what's he ask for? The hill country that has the giants in it. At 85. Because he doesn't compromise. He could have said, you know, I know God said I was supposed to go take the hill country, but can I have Bethlehem area? Because it's a little more flat. There's some better rivers running through there. Those people are weak. I can run them over easier. Can I have that? And you know what Joshua probably would have said? Probably like, yeah, you're Caleb. You can have whatever you want, man. But he didn't. Because he remembered what God had told him. He remembered what God had told him to do. And he decided not to compromise it. And I gotta tell you, we need that in our life. We need men and women who remember who God is and what God has called them to do. You go, I don't know what God, Quentin, I don't know what God's called me to do. I'll tell you some things he's called you to do. He's called you to love him with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. He's called you to love your neighbor as yourself. These are things God's called us to do, and we should not compromise those for our own comfort. These are areas we should not be compromising. We have a calling, and compromise kills calling. You understand that? Compromise kills calling. We can't be compromising. Now, I wish I'd there, but I want you to hear, because this is amazing. I always was intrigued by this scripture in Joshua, because at the beginning, if you remember as we read it, it says, he says to Joshua, Caleb says to Joshua, you remember what Moses said about us? So like in my mind, I'm like, I want to know what that is, right? I want to know what God said about you, Caleb, that made you want to be this beast of a man that at 85 took a hill country, drove everybody out while all the rest of the country around you was compromising. What did that? And we see this, man. We get a glimpse of this in Numbers chapter 14, verse 24. This is God talking to Moses. My servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land to which he went, and his descendants shall possess it. Because he has a different spirit. Man, that's one of the best compliments I think I've ever heard somebody get in Scripture. Man, sometimes people look at me and go, Quentin, you're weird, or you do things different. And then I read about Caleb, and I'll go, yes, thank you. When did we decide we wanted to have the same spirit and act the same way and compromise in the same way as all the rest of culture around us? If we decide to live lives of no compromise and do the things God's called us to do and chase the goals that God puts in front of us and try to figure out the calling God has in our lives, if we try to live as believers and followers and disciples of Jesus, if we try to take the gospel to the world around us, if we try to love others more than we love ourselves, if we try to really share the love of Christ with those around us, I assure you, we will have a different spirit. We will. But see, God knew that Caleb had a calling to take a hill country, and he had a different spirit. Now, here's the amazing thing. When we were at man camp and we were using those compasses, I mean, it was the important part of it was setting your mark. It wasn't like just not just set the compass and go, okay, I'm going this general direction, right? Because that's when you get off. It was setting a mark. You had to find a marker. You had to be like, okay, that tree that's about 50 yards from now, I'm going to walk there, and then I'm going to reset this thing and do it again. And I found that's what we need to do in our lives. I'm sitting here at 36, married, father of three girls. The only other boy in my house is a cat, you know. I'm having to set a really specific mark right now. Okay, I want my girls, when they're this age, to understand this about what men look like. And if that's my mark, here's where I've got to go. But can I tell you, one day I'll get to that place. And I'll have to sit there and make another mark. There's a time in my life when I felt like God was calling me to ministry. I had to say, okay, I'm having to set a mark. This is what it looks like for me to walk away from college football, to walk away from my degree I wanted to get, to walk away from this job and to step into full-time ministry. This is what that mark looks like. But I got there, and I still had to go further, and I had to set another mark. See, God has a direction and a call for your life. And I make fun of Todd and his group getting lost and running back to number one. But can I tell you, some of us in here this morning, we need to run back to number one because we've got this whole thing messed up over the last few years. We need to reset our mark on where God's called us to be, who God's called us to be, and what God's called us to do. So the bottom line this morning is this. Set your mark and stay the course. Realize that God loves you. He sent Jesus to die for you, and that should dictate the course of your life. So set your mark and stay the course. We see this in Caleb, but we see this in the New Testament as well. And I really want the song this morning to kind of be the end of this sermon, because I think this song's amazing, what these guys are about to do. You guys come on up. Well, we see a guy named Paul who was on a very different course than he ended up. He was going a very different direction than the place he ended. I mean, we see Paul was kind of chasing his own course until God changes his course, right? But here's what I love. You read, it's not like everything was easy for Paul once he found Jesus. In fact, things got a lot more difficult for Paul when he found Jesus. And we see time and time again where Paul is having to run for his life. He could have compromised, right? He could have gave in. He could have compromised. He could have said, you know what? Let's don't go here. Let's don't go preach here. But maybe God wanted him to go there. God says, I want you here, and he would go. God stopped him going somewhere, he would stop. God asked him to speak to a certain group of people, he would speak. And every time it would cost him something. And I think, man, because here's the thing, I think, was he somebody great? No, he was like one of us. He was doing his own thing, living his own life, doing his own job. His happened to be against the church. He was trying to make money, trying to rise up through the ranks. He was just trying to be who he thought he was supposed to be in that culture. And he met God, and God changed his mark. And when he did, Paul set that mark. And he stayed the course. And he writes something in Galatians. Look at this verse. I love this verse. In Galatians, in the last chapter of Galatians. He says this. I think, man, this is where I want to be this morning. He says, let us not grow weary of doing good. For in due season we will reap if we do not give up. Look, I get it. Sometimes the course, the mark you're going toward is going to go through briars. Sometimes you're going to have to watch out for snakes. Sometimes it's going to be a river to cross. It's not going to be easy. But don't forget the God that loves you. That when you were in your worst place, far away, selfish, doing your own thing, that God has a call for you, a purpose, and a plan. And that's the God that wants you to set your mark and stay the course.